We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
These are the true quiet hours of the NBA 365-day calendar, which is nice and also a little weird at times because, you know, things can get too quiet. And it feels like it's been a little too quiet for the NBA calendar. But before we jump in, I just want to shout out, you know, something that we've been working hard on, Richie specifically, BuzzBeat Plus. If you are not a subscriber to that, I would highly encourage you to do so. You get access to a lot of really cool stuff. If you want to know how to find that, I would just go to our Twitter handle, to be honest. The Linktree link is there, and you can figure out a way to become a subscriber to BuzzBeat Plus, the Substack there. We got some really cool emails. I'm just going to shout out two people real quick. Rich Ballantyne has been a Hornets fan since 88, which is the year I was born, which is pretty cool. Sent us a really nice email. Had a question in there, Rich. We're going to get to that in this episode. And then Andy from UK, which is like always very cool to see someone from, you know, a different part of the world who's listening to your stuff and tuning in to the Hornets. So thank you guys for being BuzzBeat Plus subscribers, number one. And thank you for the questions. Won't read the whole emails, but I promise we will get to those questions. So BuzzBeat Plus, subscribe if you haven't already, especially before the season starts. Get out ahead of that. Some really cool benefits for you and really good access. All right. Well, before we get into the questions, we actually do have a bit of meat on the bone today. So thank you for all the questions. But I want to jump in and just like what's going on in life with you guys. I feel like, you know, it's summer. Everybody gets going their different directions, hunkering down with family, going on vacays. The NBA gets quiet after free agency. BG, what have you been up to?
A little bit of travel. I've got I've got like two weddings to, or a wedding and a bachelor party to attend in a couple of weeks. So try to do all of that stuff without catching COVID. Fingers crossed. It's always it can be a risky proposition these days, but a little bit of travel. And I don't know, I've been doing my annual like 3 weeks in July and August where I get like back into baseball. I was just been like, I don't know, just going hard on like trade deadline baseball stuff recently.
We should have done an emergency pod, BG.
We should have done that. We could have. I was actually in DC this past weekend for the end of the Juan Soto era there. In fact, did not do much baseball, but did stop by the National Gallery of Art in DC, which was amazing, and then caught some of the radio call of Mets Nationals while I was heading out of town on Sunday, which was predictably depressing and I'm sure is only getting more and more bleak as far as baseball inside the Beltway goes. But no, I'm doing well. And this time of the year, like, you know, really dial back some of the hoops watching a little bit, but still like taking my time getting through some games because this is always a good time of the year to get prepared for draft cycle guys the next year. Returning prospects and guys that are getting ready to transfer into the ACC. So I try to use it as a space it out a little bit, but still going through, you know, probably ends up being, as opposed to you know, one or two games a day, it's probably, you know, 2 to 3 games a week or something like that. So still getting a little bit of basketball viewing in here as well. And I got to meet Lee, I guess, for the second time in person. Lee and I met last week.
Love it.
Or 2 weeks ago, and broke bread and had a couple.
The vibes were high.
They were good.
Half of the Busby mind share was just, ideas were flowing. Let's just say that.
The planets were aligning, you know, when more than one of us is in a room at the same time, you know, it's the juices get flowing, as well as did the a couple of, I guess, cold adult beverages we had that night. But how about Lee? How about you? What have you been up to, man?
Well, I mean, I think you both kind of alluded to, it's a little bit of the dog days of summer from a sports standpoint. So I'm doing what any self-respecting sports fan should be doing, and that's cramming, you know, all of my fantasy research into like 3 weeks before draft starts. So
there you go.
We're just going hard on the fantasy. You know, I wish I was still like a magazine guy, but I have to say I've transitioned fully to like the podcast research.
Yeah,
you forget how many wide receivers and running backs change teams in the off season, mm-hmm. particularly this off season. So, yeah, I mean, obviously that's what I'm up to.
Well, this is, I always feel like this is the one time of year, and I'd like to say it always sneaks up on me, but it really doesn't, because I know it's coming. It's like, oh, yes, month of, you know, late July, mid to late July into August, you know, I'm going to watch a lot of baseball. I never do because I'm married with a kid. And so late night, I watch shows, right? Like, I get some downtime and you watch shows. So anyways, The Bear, if you haven't seen The Bear,
yeah,
I highly, highly recommend that.
Loved it.
Watch that. We have a listener question from this girl named Kelsey. I'm not sure exactly who it is, who is going to ask us to. We won't go through the whole Hornets roster, but we will get to, maybe if you've seen the show Alone. It was originally on the History Channel, I think, but you can find it on Netflix now. Really cool show. So we'll pick a Hornets player at the end of the show and say who would thrive on Alone. Probably none of them, but we'll pick one for the sake of fun. So yeah. Anyways, good to be on here with you boys. Let's jump in. We're going to try to keep this at a reasonable time limit today, which I'm not good at, so I better transition us in here. So we do have a lot of questions that I thought overlap. So again, I want to give everyone a shout out that ask us, but let's start here and really let's have a minutes allocation conversation, if you will. But Div B, our good friend at StatCenter on Twitter, did ask us, what's your current ideal breakdown of minutes at the five, which I think is a good place to start. And then we can kind of dive into more of, you know, who's going to take Miles minutes, what's happening with that, all that good stuff. Not good stuff, but all that stuff. So I'll go quickly. And then I want to throw it to Yuli and kind of get your thoughts here, because I think this situation might not have a finality just yet. We might not know who the starting center is for the Hornets, or he might not be on the roster, rather. You know, as the current roster sits, you have to assume that Plumlee is going to be the starting center, is depressing as that is to me, at least. I do think that the Hornets are in a position with Nick Richards still on the roster and obviously just drafting Mark Williams, like those guys, like Plumlee, he can't play as many minutes per night as he did last year, at least in my opinion. So I don't know exactly how I would kind of split up the minutes between those three. And then haven't even talked about Kai Jones being in the conversation. I think Summer League showed me that he's going to need to play five. I can't really imagine a time anytime soon that he's going to be able to play four. So I really think that Plumlee, when it averages out, shouldn't be playing more than 20 minutes per night at center. I don't know if Richards gets squeezed here. I think that's like the Richards Mark Williams minute allocation is going to be a pretty interesting second banana competition in training camp, I think. And then Kai Jones, like, it's just, he's got to play this year. Like, we got to see it. Like, you know, the Hornets can't sit on their hands here. I mean, he's in his second year. So I you know, I'm kind of bouncing around here. I don't really have an answer, but I think it's very, very interesting. And again, I still think there's a chance Miles Turner's on this roster before the beginning of the season. So we might.
Spencer will never. He'll never let that die.
Well, I don't think that Mitch Kupchak will either, nor will the Indiana Pacers franchise. So, yeah. And look, there's a recent report out there. I mean, Turner's, I think he's reached the point where he's like, all right, get me out of here or don't. Like, I'm not coming back once I'm a free agent. So, like, let's do something. So I think it's kind of like reached the mesh point. I think we could see a deal. I think the Hornets are still interested. What say you, Lee?
I mean, when you look at the allocation from last year, obviously Plumlee was the every night start. I'm kind of like throwing Harrell out of this conversation. For now, at least. Like, I know it's possible he could return. I'm just kind of putting that to the side.
Yeah, I think for all intents and purposes, you can,
it's like, just not productive.
Yeah.
So Plumlee, you know, 3,700 center minutes for Plumlee, 1,800 for PJ Washington. So, you know, there's essentially kind of like a 50% split there. I think you're still going to, even with all the roster additions, even with the drafting of Mark Williams, even with whatever the Hornets do in acquisition, free agency, trade, I still think you're going to see like a lot of PJ Washington closing at center. And I think he should be. I think like, it was Brian, actually. Brian put together like a series of really good tweets on PJ Washington and kind of some of the leaps he's had as a defender over the past year, and some of those best defensive plays and his versatility. So I want to continue to see that be a massive part of this center rotation. I agree with you, Spencer, that right now, unfortunately, it does kind of, particularly with Steve Clifford and kind of his propensity to lean on veterans, that we're going to see a lot of Plumlee at least right out. And then I would hope, and look, you guys know I've been one of the kind of, you know, ardent Nick Richards defenders on this podcast, but I would really, really hope that Mark Williams is given those opportunities over and over and over again, barring injury. I think Nick Richards is justifiably like potentially worth like one of the last roster spots, but I don't necessarily want to see him being given opportunities to get on the floor in spite of Mark Williams. That would be a bit upsetting for me. So I think it's Plumlee, particularly at the beginning, with a ton of PJ Washington, and then Mark Williams kind of comes along slowly. Ideally, he pops and like takes over the starting position at some point. But I don't know how realistic that is to expect.
Yeah, I want to echo some of the things you guys just said, starting with what Lee touched on to begin, which is like, no matter how you split this up, it's important to state like they're probably going to need to close games or most close games with PJ at the five before, you know, again, we'll see. What happens with injuries, we'll see if there are transactions, etc. But Plumlee, you're not getting enough offense, right? And Mark Williams hopefully is ready defensively to be there, but even then teams might feel like they're able to you know, in a late game situation, switch a ball screen that's Mark Williams screening for LaMelo, right? Depending on how what their personnel looks like, obviously. But what can Mark Williams do with a switch? He was not much of a post-up threat at Duke. Post-ups didn't look good at Summer League. So that's something to consider. So I think, you know, PJ with the ability to open up the offense, to play five out, to be versatile guarding ball screens, to give them, to unlock some of their switch potential, is a big deal. And I think that's one of the reasons why, yes, you're going to have to find some way to carve out either like significant, like, you know, like significant minutes for PJ at the five still, or you're going to have to be like selective and say like PJ's only going to play maybe 8 minutes a game at center, but they're all going to be leverage minutes. Do you know what I mean? Like it's going to be 6 minutes in the fourth quarter or 4 minutes at the end of each half, or, you know, whatever, however you want to, you know, break it down. But just again, he's going to have to factor into that mix. And depending on how things go this season, you know, Plumlee seems like a guy that could be used as a trade chip in some shape or form, just given his contract as an expiring, you know, the Hornets, as Spencer noted, could certainly look to make for a swing, you know, trade for someone at the five with perhaps Miles Turner, as has been rumored for years now. And maybe you're getting Turner at like the nadir of his trade value, right? So maybe it wouldn't cost you as much to swing a deal for Miles Turner as it would, you know, 2 years ago, especially with, you know, even like less runway on his contract as well. So that's probably something to consider. I think this is a tough hypothetical to consider. And a lot of it depends on how you view Kai Jones, to Spencer's point, like who absolutely played his best basketball in Vegas at Summer League, when Charlotte played him at the backup five behind Mark Williams. And there are obvious defensive concerns for Kai at both the four, or him trying to, you know, anchor a defense at the five, despite some of the rim protection flashes and some of the athleticism that he is able at times to show guarding ball screens in a couple of different fashions. That just feels like a tough sell for someone like Steve Clifford, right? Like, you know, if you're trying to, the way that I would manage this might be different than Steve Clifford. And I think some of it also depends on how Steve Clifford wants to guard pick and roll this season. Like, that could end up sort of like shaping how this thing flows. But let's just say, like, the thing that I had is I was thinking about this like pre-trade deadline. Mark Williams is looking passable defensively, passable on offense, keeping his head above water. Plumlee's still here. Like, I was thinking it's probably like 18 minutes a night for Plumlee at center, like the ceremonial start, then a little bit of time here and there, which would be a pretty, I mean, he was like 24 minutes per game last season, but he's played like in Denver 2 years ago, he was like 17 minutes a game. So I'm thinking more in that line. Mark Williams in the 20 minute range, and then PJ Washington playing the rest of that. You know what I mean? Or maybe you flip those minutes with Mark Williams, like something along those lines. But to be clear, like, Kai Jones is cut completely out of that if you play it that way. You know what I mean? But you can't, there, you can't play four centers. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can't, you also can't do that. So, like,
it's so weird. It's like, we have long been searching for a center, but at the same time, it almost feels like we have too many. It's a strange.
Yeah. Yeah. Because Nick Richards is not even factoring into my calculus in that scenario. Now, if you put Kai in the mix, can you do Plumlee 18 minutes, Mark Williams 20 minutes, Kai 10? Yeah. But now you're at zero center minutes for PJ. And we've just sort of highlighted why it's imperative that he plays. And I know there's like maybe a greater calling for him to play more minutes at the four this season, just given what's happening with Miles Bridges. But like, we all sort of understand the importance of playing PJ at the five at times. So,
and Brian, just to give like a little color to that, for fans who maybe new listeners, but if you've listened to this podcast, you're probably already very well aware of this. Like, basically 2,000 possessions from PJ Washington at center last year, plus 6 point differential. It's just been one of the most successful lineups over like a multi-year period.
The offense,
I think the more intelligent way maybe to even think of it is like, start with like, at least in my mind, like, start with Kai Jones, who again I think really needs to play this year. Who can he play with out of the other guys on this roster that in theory can play five? The answer, the best answer at least, is PJ Washington, right? Like, and then he's playing like the Robert Williams Boston Celtics role, where he's kind of roaming on defense and Washington can try to bulk up, you know, and play up a position defensively. Mm-hmm. And then obviously on the other end, Jones is more your rim runner, true five. But like, he can't play with Richards, at least I wouldn't advise that.
Yeah.
And I don't really think Jones can play with Williams or Plumlee, you know? I mean, not until we see some facet of a jump shot, which we have not seen.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like that defensive alignment, you know, requires the ability to be versatile guarding ball screens with the prominent screen defender a la PJ. And he's not Al Horford, but PJ can do a lot of stuff and he can switch. And you know, the other guys need to be switchy as well in that type of alignment. So guys like, you know, someone like Jalen McDaniels makes a lot of sense in those pairings. I think Spencer's bringing up a good point too. I think there are going to be some of these lineups where, you know, it's going to be sort of like floating around. Like, you're going to have two guys that are, you know, it's going to be PJ and Kai or PJ and JT Thor or whatever. And they're both sort of like playing four and a halves. You know what I mean? And that could like, those roles could differ from both offense to defense, you know what I mean? In terms of like, who's the one screening and diving, who's the one guarding ball screens on the op, like it could flip. It does kind
of, to your point, Brian, like I don't that is imagining 2 4.5s. I like that idea, but like in the James Borrego defensive scheme, it was a lot of switching, a lot of chaos.
Yeah.
In the Steve Clifford scheme, we can assume it's going to be a lot of drop, you know, a lot of getting, you know, sink down, protect the gaps.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff, and maybe that works too, but it's just going to be a totally different. It's going to be different aesthetically with 2 4.5s.
It is going to be interesting to see how Clifford walks that line, even with someone like PJ playing like sort of like more traditional small ball lineups that would, you know, like maybe it's PJ at the five. He's the de facto five, and you know, and McDaniels and Hayward are the two forward spots. Like, you know, PJ has a 7'3" wingspan. He's shown some ability to be versatile guarding pick and roll, to be athletic when you ask him to be in the drop, to guard at a couple different levels. But like, that's not really like his. That's not the best way to use him defensively guarding the pick and roll. You know what I mean? So I think that will be fascinating to see. I just think like you're going to have to figure that out one way or the other, because PJ's shooting at the five is just like, I mean, it's very impactful when he's playing the four too, but what it can do for you when he plays center and that pick and pop game is that he's so good with LaMelo working together, that I think you're going to have to figure out defensively like what you want that to look like on the other end. And I mean, for whatever it's worth, Steve Clifford spent a lot of time with the Brooklyn Nets this past season, and they switched a ton, right? So, you know, maybe we'll see how much of that has rubbed off on him. Some of that was also like Brooklyn's, you know, their personnel was sort of asking for them to defend that way as well. So that's, you know, it's different. But I last thing that I would say on this, and then I'll throw it to either of one of you guys. I just think like it does feel like, and when we talk about some of like the three and the four position, I'm sure we can bring this up as well. It does feel like they could consolidate some of these guys, which is why a trade makes sense at some point. We'll see what happens with the injuries as well. But I just think a lot is going to depend on the comfort level with PJ and where Mark Williams is, not just in October, but like where Mark Williams is once they get into like sort of like the stretch run of the season. You know what I mean? How does he progress? Because if Williams is really, really good, and I think all of us agree he's going to be a good pro, but if he's like very good, you know, early on in his career, at an advanced portion of his career, then it makes Plumlee like, you know, immediately expend, you know what I mean? Like you just immediately expendable in some way, shape or form. And all of a sudden, like, you know, it's very tough to like see the value in playing that guy beyond like spot minutes.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Okay, so let's transition and talk about Miles Bridges. And for the sake of example here, let's assume Miles Bridges is not going to play for the Charlotte Hornets this upcoming season. Number one, BG, where do these minutes get reallocated to? And then number two, where is the scoring coming from? Which is probably the bigger issue. I think we can find enough players to get the minutes, but the scoring is going to be really tough to replace, and the playmaking for that matter.
Yeah, I mean the rim pressure is going to be like a big challenge, obviously. And look, you know, we saw PJ play a larger share of his minutes over like the probably the final third of the season at four last year. You know, they started sort of shifting Miles to the threesome, playing he and PJ together, those two hybrid forward spots, along with, you know, one, this is really like after they acquired Harrell, and Plumlee and Harrell became, you know, kind of like more of a platoon at the center position with PJ mixed in as well. And I just think like you're going to have to give PJ a ton of playing. I mean, he was kind of just the answer to like the center question in a way. But assuming, you know, Plumlee and Williams are playing a lot of center time, and who knows how Kai Jones factors into that mix as well. Like PJ is going to have to play big minutes at the four. He offers the movement, shooting, the screen versatility, both sides of the court, how he can switch out and guard a bunch of positions. But what he can do is a screener partnering up with guys like LaMelo Ball, and Terry Rozier, maybe making things easier for someone like James Bouknight. But his ability to pick and pop, his ability to roll, you haven't seen it, I would say, like in terms of like a high volume fashion, but the short roll playmaking is something he can do. And PJ's shown the ability to short roll playmake even when someone's in the dunker spot. Like he has the ability to make those little like drop passes and find guys for, you know, when he's playing the four, he dives to the hoop and, you know, defense on the back line rotates and he can throw a little hook pass to, you know, Mason Plumlee for a dunk or Mark Williams for a dunk. So I think some of that is interesting. He just does a lot of stuff that can sort of like breathe life into an offense with the shooting, the passing, and the occasional, you know, like above the rim finishing. Earlier in his career, we saw him like post mismatches, which is not, I don't think at this point, like much of a strength of his, and it's something he's really gone away from. But maybe they try to dust that off a little bit more. Like that's not a great way in terms of like generating rim pressure, but it's another way. It's another way, albeit one that's coming, you know, it's a little more, you know, flat and stationary, but it's another way of maybe drawing fouls, maybe puncturing defenses a little bit when the pick and roll isn't humming. So I think that is sort of like an obvious place to start. At this point, I think you're just going to have to see more Jalen McDaniels too. Defensively, he's ready for it. We know what he can do guarding a bunch of positions on the ball, either being at the point attack, navigating screens, what he can do against some, you know, guarding as like a perimeter stopper, that type of player. I mean, I wouldn't say Jalen's necessarily like a stopper, but the ability to go out and defend one-on-one some, you know, power or bigger wings that are in the league. We also know what Jalen does as like a backline help defender. He has shown the ability to be a help side rim protector, to rotate, to be in the right places, to sort of like see through different actions and be in the right place at the right time. So like defensively, he's there. Offensively, I think he does enough stuff to kind of like keep the wheels running as a spot up guy, as a catch and go guy, what he does in transition, the baseline cuts, like he's nice. He and Cody Martin both do a nice job kind of like cutting along the baseline and making plays on the weak side or hitting the glass. But that's not, you know, that's just stuff that keeps things humming offensively. I don't think he's going to like be able to take on like a larger creation role, but he just does a lot of different stuff. He can even give you some short role playmaking as well. So I think it's a lot of PJ, it's a lot of Jalen, and you know, I don't think the Vegas Summer League experience was great for JT Thor, except for maybe the last game. He looked pretty good. But I think you're going to have to see some, you know, some JT. I think JT Thor is going to get a shot there as well. And if this season just goes like sideways at some point and, you know, Charlotte's trending down towards the bottom of the Eastern Conference, they're looking for a high lottery pick, then all of a sudden it becomes, you know, a lot more JT Thor time, maybe some Kai Jones minutes as well.
Yeah. So this is the big question, right? Like, I mean, Miles Bridges took a massive leap from last offseason to this season. I think it was Spencer who mentioned this already and hit it on the head. Like, there is kind of like conceivably like ways to replace certain things that Miles Bridges does with this roster. Like, when you rattle off, and I am using the term wing like slightly liberally here, but when you rattle off kind of the bevy of wings this team has, like, there is a ton of guys like Cody Martin, Gordon Hayward, Jalen McDaniels, yeah, JT Thor, Kelly Oubre, James Bouknight, even a guy like Bryce McGowan's that was good in summer league. But the one thing I don't think any of these guys can replicate in any meaningful way is the playmaking. The downhill playmaking, the isolation playmaking, the bully ball, there just isn't a candidate to make that type of leap as a playmaker. Like, Rozier and Hayward are pretty tapped out, like, from what they are who they are at this point. I do think LaMelo Ball can certainly make another jump as a scorer. We've talked about some of his deficiencies and where he can continue to improve. I think it's totally reasonable. The most ready are the two that BG already said. Jalen McDaniels, for sure. And then I do think JT Thor is kind of like 1B in that grouping. I won't talk about them too much because BG already laid it out. I think a real long shot here, someone who I wasn't super optimistic on during the draft process, but has theoretically has some upside value as a playmaker, is James Bouknight. I would love to see him make a jump. I don't think we've seen a ton of evidence that is going to happen. But like, if you're going dark horse candidate, it's James Bouknight makes a huge leap from year one to year two and can provide that like nuclear athleticism, downhill rim pressure, transition rim pressure, like all that. So that's like, you know, if you're a Hornet fan and you're wish casting a little bit, it's Bouknight makes a huge jump. And then the last couple things I'll mention is Oubre is who he is. Like, we know that Oubre was halfway through the season was having a career shooting year by leaps and bounds, just like shooting upper 30s, low 40s from three. Where does he end the year? He ends the year at 34%. What does he shoot for his career? 33%. Like, he is who he is. That is Kelly Oubre. And then the last thing I'll say is, you know, maybe you get a 3-4% improvement again from Cody Martin. Yeah. And then the other, like, hindsight is 2020. Things would have played out differently. This is totally unfair. But it'd be nice to still have Caleb Martin.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. Yeah, rim pressure-wise, for sure. Yeah, cutting and all that stuff. You brought up two names, Lee, real quick. I mean, Cody Martin and James Bouknight were the two. Now, of course, positionally – not the same as Miles Bridges for all the, you know, physical obvious reasons on either end. But, those are the two guys that I would focus on here because I think they're like, just in terms of how do you replace the scoring. I mean, they're the, you know, JT Thor, I love his potential. He's just not ready. He's just not ready to play those kind of minutes in that kind of role. I love Jalen McDaniels too. I really, really do. But I just see that guy as kind of a more of a defensive glue. You know, go over there, stay in the corner, make enough corner threes we count on you, and no be question. A really, really good cutter, right? Baseline cutter, and help us put some rim pressure. But I mean, I actually think the real answer here is probably Cody Martin. You know, in the Hornets, they extended him. He's not an incapable playmaker. I actually think we saw more of that from him earlier in his career than we have maybe last season or last few seasons. But like, it's time for him to break out, and this is not a good thing for the franchise, but this might be a real opportunity for Caleb Martin to cement himself, you know, as an NBA rotational player and a guy who can score the ball consistently and distribute it consistently. And look, this is going to be a shitty offense without Miles Bridges. I mean, I think we can go ahead and like acknowledge that, but I do think Caleb Martin can provide enough secondary playmaking behind LaMelo Ball and Terry Rozier, you know, really third wheel kind of playmaking, to keep the Hornets' head above water, you know, on nights where they need it. And look, I think Bouknight can just like take a jump in scoring this year, maybe not efficiently, but just from opportunity off the bench. I think he can just be that guy to just, hey man, go hunt it down. You know, let's focus on playmaking. Let's focus on seeing the floor. Let's focus on making really good decisions, and Steve Clifford will help him move in the right direction that way. But we also really need you to hunt your shot, because it's the only way we're going to get to 100 points as a team. Right.
Yeah. I mean, it is amazing that the offense is going to be, is, you know, looking pretty rough as Steve Clifford rolls back into town. Just the timing is, I mean, it is what it is. It is interesting. Like, Bouknight as like the microwave scorer off the bench is, I'm intrigued by the possibility of it. you can go back and listen to us talking about book night before the draft and after the draft. And I wasn't like a huge believer in book night. I did like him somewhat as a prospect, but I also don't like, to be clear, like I agree with Spencer. I think you're gonna have to ask him to try to do that stuff with this roster, but I really don't like love that. I don't like think that's his archetype. Like I stand by the belief that like book night should be used in a role that's like Terry Rozier. You know what I mean? And I know he doesn't have the knockdown movement shooting of Rozier, but I just think he has to be thought of as a in a way where you're designing stuff for him, as opposed to saying like, hey, when LaMelo's off, you're running pick and roll every time down the court or whatever.
The one thing I do get curious, BG, just to jump in real quick, like on him and Rozier, is that Book Knight, his athleticism, his wingspan, his first step, which can be pretty explosive. Like, I agree. I don't ever think that's going to be his, like, that's not going to bread his butter, right? Playmaking and being this just dominant ISO scorer. But I think there are more physical traits to tap into there, you know, opposed to a guy like Terry Rozier, where if he can just make it cleaner, that he could morph into something that resembles a pretty, you know, a pretty flame, you know, pretty nuclear, you know, ISO score, more so than a guy like Rozier, who's just a knockdown shooter. And I don't ever see Book Knight being that catch and shoot wise, you know?
Yeah. Again, I mean, I see him as someone that's kind of stuck between two archetypes right now.
Yeah.
And it did seem like the way they were using him in summer league last year, like they were setting him up for that sort of like the bench scorer role. Right. You know what I mean? And then, but the season started and they were in such a win now mode, and then everything else kind of went off the rails. I don't think we have to give up on Book Knight yet. There's still like you know, a lot of talent there. And it's like he may need to play some backup 1 minutes. I mean, I guess that's going to be right as of right now. Rozier seems slotted for those minutes again. But all of this gets to the point where like there's going to be an incredible responsibility put on LaMelo Ball. We can also, I guess we can throw it in here at the end as well. Bryce McGowan's is the guy that can pressure the rim, showed it at Nebraska, showed some stuff at Summer League, but can get to the rim as both a cutter and a guy that can get into the paint and use his length. But you know, how much are they going to be relying on a, you know, 180-pound two-way rookie for that type of stuff? You know what I mean? Like a guy
scraping the barrel here.
Yeah, I there's some potential, but it's hard. It's hard to see, I think.
All right. Well, there's one more big topic I did want us to try to touch, and it might take us the longest to get through because I think there's a lot of things to talk about here, but. You know, if you read the reporting, it does, depending on how you read reporting in the NBA, it does appear that Charlotte has had some conversations with Utah about Donovan Mitchell, and that maybe they have heated up in the past week or so. As again, depends on how you read the reporting. You know, the New York Utah talks came to a stall. I tend to think this could definitely be some Danny Ainge. Chicanery. Some hey,
he's
look
back, folks,
look
he's
at
back.
Us we're talking to other teams. Better up that asking price, Knicks. Look at us over here, we're actually being serious about another team. So I don't really take it that seriously, being 100% honest, but the question is, if the rumors about us being in talks with Utah are true, would adding Mitchell significantly change the way how you feel about this offseason? That question was from Rohan Patel. He is at RJPATEL989 on Twitter. Thank you for the question. You know, I would say that it all depends on what that price for Mitchell is. And I can only imagine that price is going to be astronomical when you consider, you know, what the Jazz were able to get for Rudy Gobert. Now, the Rudy Gobert trade is not the Donovan Mitchell trade, right? Like, mm-hmm. like, you know, all these things exist in their own way, in their own entities. But, you know, I do think that the way that the league is just throwing around first round picks now, it's like, I would just imagine that's what Utah is after. Like, I think Charlotte does have things to put on the table. Like guys like Kai Jones and James Book Knight are eye of the beholder kind of prospects. You know, like I think there's probably some teams out there that value them. I think there's a lot of GMs out there. Like I'm not interested. But Charlotte is plus one in future first round draft picks with the pick that they'll get from Denver. So they have two first round draft picks in next summer, and then, you know, Stepien rule kicks in, but they can trade as many first round picks as really that the league rules allow them to moving forward. So, you know, I mean, proceed with caution, Hornets, but depending on what the asking price is, they can, you know, they can throw PJ Washington, James Bouknight, Kai Jones, Terry Rozier, and a bunch of picks on the table. And to me, like, that offer's not nothing. That yeah. offer is not nothing. Those are not long-term contracts. I think Terry Rozier can be flipped. I think PJ Washington can be extended and traded at a later date. You know, all those picks, you still got, you got two young guys on rookie contracts. Like, that's not bad.
Yeah.
Could they make that work with, like, Rozier as the central contract without including mm-hmm. Hayward? Like, is there enough, you know, rigmarole that could happen there?
That's a good question. See, I haven't even, like, gone into the trade machine and, like, exercise this, which is, yeah, I really haven't. I haven't even like gone through the cap, you know, mechanics of it. But Charlotte has the contracts needed to make this work. Whether totally. I think, you know, like, does Utah care if it's Gordon Hayward or Terry Rozier? That's probably not the deal breaker. You know, the deal right. breaker is probably like the protections on the picks,
how many swaps.
Yeah. Right. So, like, again, I don't think this is a. Like, I don't think the rumor of Charlotte and Washington being, like, really in this is that serious. I think it's just a matter of time before he ends up in New York because that's where he wants to end up. And they've got a lot to offer, too. But does it change the way I would look at this offseason? The answer for me would be yes, Lee. And then want to get your thoughts just because, like, Charlotte hasn't done something like this. Like, this is – they don't operate like this. Like – to my knowledge, Nick Batum is the last, like, pretty, like, eye-opening trade that this franchise made. And it would be, you know, at 10 cents of what this would cost. So this would – I think – here, I want to end it here, and then I'll throw it to you, Lee. If they did this, this would be a panic move looking ahead with LaMelo Ball's free agency, which is not as far away as we might like to think it is.
Don't make me nervous, Spencer.
That's what the trade, depending, you know, what it would cost. That's what it would say to me, if that makes sense.
No, I hear what you're saying. And I also, I think I'm in your camp of, like, this is fun to talk about and interesting to kind of banter about. I do think it's a very low percentage chance of this happening. And, you know, again, like Ball and Mitchell would be awesome. Like that, I honestly yeah. do
electric
believe,
factory.
Like in a yeah. vacuum, they yeah. actually fit incredibly well.
Offensively,
next to each other,
offensively, it would
offensively,
be awesome.
Spectacular, yeah. yes. spectacular. And like I'm still a pretty decent believer in the fact that LaMelo Ball eventually becomes like a useful defensive player. I know there's still a long way to go there, but anyways, I digress. Like that would be incredible in a vacuum, but like. Man, the kind of like graveyard roster that you're left with after thinking about what it would take to pull this off, you know, you're left with like either Hayward or Rozier, one of the two. You're left with and then you're basically left with like that hodgepodge of wings we just talked about, and PJ is just such an important like. Swing player for this roster and lineup configurations and the way everything works. I realize it's ridiculous to like, you know, like get caught up on the fact that, you know, you're losing PJ Washington, like you're getting freaking Donovan Mitchell. Like I get that. It's just, when you look ahead to the draft equity that you would be saying, you know, goodbye to for the next half decade, and the pieces surrounding what would be an awesome backcourt. I do think, unfortunately, because of how crippling, like you can't overstate how crippling the Bridges stuff is to this franchise and this roster. Even with that, I do think the Hornets would probably be like technically better in the immediate term with Donovan Mitchell on this yeah. roster with LaMelo Ball, but I think the long-term outlook gets really, really messy and could be, you know, it could be one of those moves where you look back in, you know, 5 years and it just, you know, maybe that, like, do they even win one playoff series? I don't know.
I don't even know if that team is above a play-in team. Honestly.
Right, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like,
mentioning quickly, too, like, for folks that are thinking about this, you do get Mitchell through the 25 season. He is on a contract for three more years. Now, he got the player option on that deal. So, you know, depending on where the team is, he's probably heading to New York at that point. But it's not like you're not trading for Miles Turner here, right? You're not trading for, you know, so you have this guy locked up and through the LaMelo Ball tenure. And so it does make some sense in that way. And you're like, whatever, let's just push our chips in. If we can re-sign both of these guys and somehow build a roster around them, this is our team for the next 8 years.
Yeah, it's just to answer the question, it would, like, whether good or bad, it would very much change my thoughts on the offseason for Charlotte, you know, acquiring a 25-year-old all-star, you know, shooting guard who can score in a bunch of different ways and has shown the ability to be, like, you know, a heliocentric, you know, creator at times. So, you know, you could certainly play he and LaMelo together and then stagger them. And you know, I mean, there's like so many good ways you could utilize those two guys together. You know, I think Rozier's going to make, like, I think Terry's at 21.5 for next year. Mitchell is at like 30.3. So, like, Rozier gets you pretty close with, like, one other salary. You know, you might be, if it was someone like PJ, you might be in the door there. But just, like, what does that do for your team long term? So, especially once you actually, like, bolster that offer with all of the picks. I agree with Spencer. Like, I think Mitchell's going to end up in New York. And, like, I do kind of think this trade at some point in time is going to get done before Mitchell goes there in free agency. New York just has the most stuff to offer right now. You know what I mean? Now, they're being investigated by the NBA, right? For tampering with regards to Jalen Brunson. So, like, we'll see. Maybe that costs them a draft pick. You know what I mean? Like, we'll see what the penalty looks like for that. And if that's the case, then maybe they're a little bit antsy about entering they're a little less eager to get in the Mitchell trade sweepstakes if they think they're going to be out some draft assets moving forward. But, like, I tend to think these things work with either the megastar forces his way where he wants to go, or it's to the team that just has the most stuff. You know what I mean? And right now, New York, there's interest there, and they have the most stuff. If New Orleans woke up and decided they want to get in this, they've got more stuff to offer than Charlotte. Like, yes, the Hornets don't have nothing. You can build some pretty compelling trade packages out of what's on the roster, assuming, you know, someone like LaMelo Ball is untouchable. But I just feel like if Mitchell's going to be moved, it's going to be to one of these teams that just has better stuff to offer than Charlotte does currently.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that.
Like, let's just say just real quickly, like, let's say they do let's say they do this deal for Mitchell. Let's say they find a way to acquire Mitchell. It acquires a bunch of draft picks, and let's say they don't lose PJ in this somehow. So you're working with, let's say Rozier somehow ends up being the center. I don't know if this kind of, like, deal is actually feasible or it's certainly not likely to happen. But let's say your starting backcourt is LaMelo, Mitchell. You still have Hayward, PJ, and, you know, Mason Plumlee, Mark Williams. That's not a top six team in the Eastern Conference, right? Or is it? I mean, like,
no,
I mean,
you know, unless you want to just, you know, the Hornets can send out the same press release the Timberwolves did about keeping Jalen's brother and be like, thank goodness Jalen McDaniels went in this deal. We feel so fortunate that we were able to hang on to this guy. I don't think so either, BG. I mean, I just look at the cost and I look at this roster and I'm like, So I guess at that point you're saying, so not only are we taking on Mitchell, but we'll find a way to create cap space. And then the combination of Mitchell and LaMelo will bring us talent, right? It'll get us in the buyout conversation. It'll, like, we can build a competent, you know, 7 to 8 man rotation and then fill in with minimum contracts. Like, where we think we can compete. I there's just not enough here. There's not, like, if Bouknight or Jones would have blossom last season, right, and, like, really would have shown something, like, this would be a different conversation, but we basically didn't see either one of them.
Yeah, you know, if, so Book, it's like, if Book Knight has like a Bones Highland like rookie season,
right?
You know what I mean? Exactly. Like he pops like that. Yeah, we're having a different conversation for sure.
But I just, it's just not worth it for the cost to me. So we'll see. You know, but you bring up a good point about New York, what they can offer, kind of where they are right now with the league. Which is probably slowing this down.
Yeah.
But, you know, Utah doesn't have to rush. Again, there's 3 years left on his deal. I don't really think his value goes down any if they trade him at the deadline or even if they trade him in the next draft. Like, you still have him under contract.
Yeah.
Maybe for even 3 years. I know he's got a player option, but, you know, depending on where he's getting traded, it might be an easy decision for him to pick that up. So they don't need to rush this decision. Fun to think about. I doubt it happens.
Yeah.
All right. Well, just to end this, and I just like have really quickly one thing to say on it and then see what you guys, what your thoughts are. But, you know, the Miles Bridges situation, we got some questions about, you know, why didn't they, you know, renounce his QO and, you know, what's the team doing, you know, all this. We already went over how his minutes are reallocated and maybe where the scoring comes from without Miles. But I just think that there were two paths to me here, right? Like the Hornets could have what I would consider the high road and renounce the QO and kind of tell him, you know, sayonara, good luck, man. But I think what the team did is said this is a legal matter. The NBA is not going to act until the legal matter is concluded. And so we are not going to act until the legal matter is concluded. And that's fine. So, you know, that's the stance the team has taken, and I think they're just waiting. So I don't really know what else there is to say on this situation, unless you guys have other thoughts.
I think that pretty much covers it, at least on my end. It's you know, the team's going to let it play out. And I mean, you know, whether I like it or not, like that's kind of how things work in these situations. And, you know, it's an incredibly unfortunate situation. Yeah. And it obviously has been by far the worst news of the offseason. So yeah, I think you covered it, Spencer. Anything, BG?
Yeah, I mean, I would just say, like, right around when the news first broke, Richie and I did a podcast that talked a lot about this. And yeah, these are not like fun conversations. It's not like fun to talk about Miles, obviously. It's like, or let me just rephrase this. It sucks to talk about Miles Bridges as a basketball player right now, or as like a contract or whatever. Like it doesn't feel like the right frame. And I know we have to do it for this, but this is not the route that I saw the Hornets pursuing at the time. I understand why they've gone this route. I don't necessarily agree with it. So, and look, more details have come out that have painted that night in even more sort of like horrific detail. So no matter what happens, I just don't want to see this guy in a Hornets uniform. I just don't. I don't want to see it. I would like to not see him play basketball for a long time, as a matter of fact. And yeah, I don't know what else there is to my end to say about this. I get the feeling that we won't see him play in the Hornets uniform. Like, you're going to see how this plays out via the legal system first and then go from there. But man, it's just a terrible, terrible, terrible situation. And every time we talk about it, I get like, I don't know, some combination of like sad and depressed and angry. Like it just, it sucks so much. So most importantly, I think I can speak for everyone else here. We hope everyone, wife, kids, everyone's doing well there. You know, now that sort of like the spotlight has kind of moved away from it to an extent. And as far as what happens with Miles, like I just hope he's not part of the future here in Charlotte. And I don't know if I can speak for everyone on that, but as far as like, you know, the family, obviously we hope everyone's doing well there. No clue what happens with him moving forward though.
Yeah, well said, BG. And you know, it's with the stuff we saw in Deshaun Watson, you know, that's not, it's different, but we saw what the NFL decided, you know, that they were going to do about his situation. Again, these are not the same things. They're very, very different, but I do hope that the NBA does not follow suit
with maybe what they think something like this, what the punishment, the deservable punishment is. So, well, that was kind of I wanted to address the questions because we did get quite a few of them, but that's a little bit of a bummer way to end this. So we'll end with something fun. Well, before we get to that question, I just wanted to give a shout out. Good friend on Twitter at @RMJ_equals_hero. Yes. Just a really funny account. UVA hoops fan. Shout out. I'm not even going to read his question because I can't get through it without laughing. But he's basically asking us a question about this coach that coaches a very successful college team in the state of Virginia that used to play for the Charlotte Hornets. That, you know, when are we just going to cut to the chase and bring him back? That person would be Tony Bennett. I trust me, I would love nothing more, but conversation for a different day. Maybe it's a serious topic at one time, but shout out to our friend. All right, last question. So the show Alone, if you haven't seen it, again, go watch it. You can find it on Netflix. It's a History Channel show. They drop contestants out in very wild native areas and basically ask them, you know, they get a number of things they can bring with them. You know, none of those things can be food, tools to help them get food, you know, build housing, etc. It's a survival show. So if you haven't seen it, go watch it. Got a question from a Kelsey, a big fan of the show. Kelsey Percy wants to know who she wanted us to go through the whole roster. Of course, we don't have time to do that. But Lee, pick one. Number one, have you seen Alone? Number two, pick one guy on this roster who you think could like not press the yellow button first if he was dropped somewhere like this.
And so I have not seen Alone, but I feel like I get the gist of it.
Okay,
it's
kind of
like
Okay.
Naked and Afraid, basically.
Yes,
and, yeah. So, and the yellow button is what, like, you get out of there.
If like,
you
I'm out.
The
yellow button. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I think I would go Mason. I think I would go Plum Dog. Because, like, number one, he's like, okay, I mean, I guess it could cut both ways. Like, number one, he's massive and, like, essentially, like, almost like a, you know, a mountain troll giant of some sort. So like, but that also means he's got like a lot of calories. He's got to procure
exactly.
to keep that battery running. The only other thing I think Plum Dog has going for him is one, like he's a little older. So like life experience never hurts in these situations. But if you remember the youngest Plumlee brother, Marshall Plumlee, who had a cup of coffee in the NBA, he was an Army Ranger, so like maybe he gave Mason some survival skill tips.
Yeah.
So
I covered Marshall at Duke actually back in the day, a couple years ago.
You know, I mean, I'm reaching here a little bit for like the you know, the second like second removed from an Army Ranger, but there's got to be something there. Like he taught him how to start a fire. You know, like
I like it. Shout out Christ School in Asheville. Maybe they learned some mountain stuff up there.
Yeah,
right? All the brothers. All right, I'm going Cody Martin. I don't really know why. I'm going Cody Martin because I just imagine him being resourceful.
He's scrappy.
Yeah,
scrappy.
You know, just he's a survivalist. You know, he earned his way into the league. I was a skeptic. I didn't like the pick when the Hornets drafted him, and I've come to love him because he works his tail off. He does all the dirty work. Like I just imagine him being dropped into a native area and just being like, okay, I got to figure this out, and I'm going to survive, and I'm going to make this freaking roster. You know, so I don't know. Cody Martin.
Yeah, I'm going with Cody Martin as well. I think Aaron Collins. I'm just like reverse engineering from like which is the guy on the Hornets the last couple of years that Eric Collins has used the most like synonyms of grit to describe their play. You know what I mean? So I think you know, like a mad dog in the meat market. We're going Cody Martin, being able to scrap and claw. Look, this is a guy that got from Moxville, North Carolina, which is a town that I've spent a little bit of time in playing basketball, but there aren't a lot of people that get out of Moxville and get $30 million contracts to go do something professionally, which is exactly what Cody Martin did. And shout out Caleb for also earning himself some money too. But to go from there to 5 years of college basketball, you know, at two different schools, and to be a second round pick, then to get a 4-year, $32 million contract, that is quite the ride. And so I would say that Cody would be give you the most sort of like versatility and you know, grit and like drive towards getting out of these scenarios.
Well,
That was fun. Maybe in the off season, as the next episode, we'll come up with a new show and we'll do a little character Hornets roster comparison.
Have you guys watched Severance yet by any chance on Apple?
Okay. So I heard about it today. I got really great golf podcast or golf group, No Laying Up. I listened to the one of their podcasts called The Trap Draw, and the whole episode was about The Bear, the show we talked about earlier, but Severance was talked about, and so it's number one on my next to watch list. So I'm glad you brought it up.
It's phenomenal. I really like it, and once you watch it or whatever, we can make some jokes about like Hornets fans wanting to be Severanced at some point. That joke will make sense to only people who have seen the show, actually.
Okay, so, next episode. But, all right, yeah. I'm going to start it tonight.
All right, boys, this was fun.
All right, good to see you guys. All right, 4BG, that's Lee. I'm Spencer. We will see you on the next episode of BuzzFeed. Be good.